Welcome back. Carfax says February is the unofficial start of the car buying season, and it's going to look like none other in years past, mostly due to the pandemic. Thought a good time to bring the car doctor, John Paul from AAA Northeast, back on the program to chat with us a little bit about transportation in 2022 and beyond. So, John, welcome virtually to currently in Quincy. Good to talk with you.
Oh, good to talk with you too, Joe. It is, you know, people start to look at it's, you know, tax refund time. They start to, maybe even if they're not really shopping, they start to kind of look around a little bit and see what interests them for vehicles out there. And there's going to be a couple of things they're going to find. If they haven't been car shopping, they haven't been kind of paying attention a lot, they're going to see higher prices than they ever have because the inventory is in such short supply right now. The combination of COVID and this semiconductor chip shortage have really slowed down the manufacturing process. And because of that, it's not unusual on some very popular models. And as an example, the Kia Telluride, sort of this midsize SUV from Kia, which offers a great warranty, it's not unusual to see them being marked up $10,000 over list price, and some other popular models as well. And that's really becoming kind of a problem. I heard the mayor being quoted earlier about it's not like you can go to a car dealership and get a car, you know, in a week. You know, it takes a year and a half to order a fire truck. In some cases, people have been waiting a year for very popular vehicles like the Ford Bronco, the reintroduced Ford Bronco. People ordered them back in July of last year, and they're starting to see them coming in now because they're so popular. The new Ford Maverick, for instance, which is a small pickup truck, very economical, very affordable, under $25,000. Ford said, people, stop ordering them. We can't make them fast enough. We have to stop. So good news in that side, but a little bit of a sticker shock and a little bit of an inventory issue. When you go to a car dealership, and I don't care where it is, you drive by and you would normally see, you know, 100, 200, 300 cars in a lot, and you might see 50 new cars and 150 used cars because several of the car manufacturers, General Motors and Ford, have sort of started the world's largest car dealership. And you can say, you can look online and say, oh, I want that red, you know, Ford F-150. Oh, it's located in Texas. Okay, we'll ship it to the local Ford dealership in Quincy, for instance, and you buy it that way. So there is this sort of weird thing going on with vehicle sales right now, and it's a challenge for the dealers, and it's a challenge for people buying.
So it begs the question, you know, if you're anticipating buying a new car a year, 2 years down the road, do you order it now and pay the higher cost, or do you wait and hope that things will kind of go back to quote-unquote normal?
If I was in the market for a car right now, or kind of thinking about buying a car right now, I would wait. I don't think, if my car was okay, I think I would keep it repaired and do the maintenance that's needed, and maybe look at buying a new car maybe in the fall or maybe even the spring of next year.
Okay. And the same is true for used cars, right? It's kind of a similar scenario that's going on with the cost of them.
Right. What happened was, at the start of the pandemic, a lot of people moved out of the city. A lot of people that took public transportation kind of moved away from taking public transportation because of the concerns about COVID, and they went out and they bought that third or fourth car in the family. That impacted the used car market. The other thing that happened was a lot of used cars come out of rental car fleets. So whether they're private leases or Hertz and Avis and Dollar and all of those, well, those companies at the beginning of the pandemic dumped their fleets because they felt that people weren't going to be traveling. And then people started to travel a little bit. The car rental companies tried to buy more cars. Well, they buy cars just like you and I do, so they have to wait in line for them as well. That used car market has changed, and I recently saw a report from a company called IC Cars. They're a Massachusetts used car aggregator, and they showed some used cars actually selling for more than they did when they were new. Some were very popular, like the Chevrolet Corvette and the Tesla Model 3. Some weren't as popular, but still were selling for above the cost of that car when it was new, even though it was a year old.
Yeah. Does that translate, do you think, to a higher trade-in value if you are going to buy a new car?
It does. It absolutely does. So just like if you were selling real estate right now and you said, oh, I'm going to sell my house because it's at the top of the market, but I have to go buy a house at the top of the market, same thing with your car. You may find that your car has gone up in value as a used car trade-in by 20 or 30%. The problem is that new car you're looking at also went up 20 or 30%. So, but if you were shopping around, and maybe I'm not a big car leasing person, but this might be an okay time to think about leasing a car for a couple of years if you needed one. And especially if you're a little bit adventurous and you're thinking, maybe I'm going to go electric. For an electric car right now, I think I would be tempted to lease only because the technology is changing so fast that you might find that the end of 3 years, the next model of that same car has another 100 miles of range. You know, maybe it charges a little bit easier. Maybe it's some features in it that weren't available today that might be available in 3 years, and the price may come down. So maybe if you're thinking about going the electric route, leasing and then trade your car in for the maximum trade right now.
I'm glad you brought up electric cars, John, because the governor just last week announced some state grant money to install 150 electric vehicle charging stations across Massachusetts, I guess, to encourage folks to purchase electric vehicles and, you know, maybe incentivize them to make the switch.
Yeah, you know, the idea of being able to do quick charging, and I believe the grant was for what's referred to as level three vehicle charging, which means that that is not what you would have at your house. At your house, you either have 110 volts or you have 240 volts to run your stove or your electric dryer. And that works well to charge an electric car, but it takes a while. It could take 6 to 10 or 11 hours to recharge an electric car. I think what the governor's proposal was to put in these DC to DC level three chargers, which on a typical electric car could recharge from, say, 20% battery life to 80% battery life in as little as 40 minutes. So you could really make that car that much more useful. So if you had a 300-mile range, you drove 240 miles, stopped and had a sandwich, charged your car up, you could drive another several hundred miles and easily do it. So the idea of seeing more and more of these level three charging really does kind of change that whole chicken and egg perspective of electric vehicles. I'm not going to buy an electric vehicle unless I can charge it. I'm not going to put a charging station in unless there's a lot of electric vehicles. And still, electric vehicles to this day, especially here in Massachusetts, really only account for less than 2% of the new cars sold. In California, it's closer to 5%. But still, there's not a ton of electric vehicles out there. But we are starting to see more charging stations. And I talk to people every day now that say, you know what, I think my next car is going to be electric.
I've been asked to ask you about electric cars. What if you're on a trip and you run out of charge? Is there a way, like, can somebody from AAA come out, like if I ran out of gas, and give me a quick charge to get me going again?
Currently, what we do in most locations now is simply pick you up and tow you to the nearest charging station.
Okay.
So it'd be like towing you to the nearest gas station.
Gotcha. Okay.
But we currently have 7 portable electric vehicle charging units. So they're sort of the equivalent of a high-speed level 2 charging. So they charge about a mile a minute. So we come out and we'll come to your car, we'll plug it in, and we'll sit there and tell you a story for 20 minutes. And at the end of 20 minutes, your car will have probably enough to go another 20 or 25 miles to get to maybe one of those high-speed charging stations, so you can do that. The units are quite costly. It's not like buying a gas can and a gallon of gas, and all of a sudden you can do road service. And they also require kind of some specialty trucks and so forth. They're not the ideal solution, because the idea of taking a gasoline-powered car or truck and having a gasoline-powered generator to go out and charge an electric car seems a little bit contrary to the whole environmental part of it. But we are also looking at, we ordered 6 of the new Ford F-150 Lightning pickup trucks, and we're hoping for high speed to high speed charging off of those. So we will come out in an electric vehicle and charge your vehicle with our electric vehicle and get you on your way, which sounds a lot more environmentally friendly. The problem is we're number, 10,000 on the list of the electric vehicle buyers as well. So we're hoping we have them on order. And again, we're kind of experimenting with it all. There's also a company that's actually headquartered in Charlestown or Somerville called Spark Charge. And they have a portable electric vehicle charging unit that, that literally is a big rechargeable battery. And we're looking at making some, we're testing with them in other parts of the country as well. So we're looking at all the options because we know that people count on AAA for road service and we want to be there. We want to be there to help them.
Sure. Do you think eventually it'd be something that you'd carry around with you, you know, in the in your trunk of your electric vehicle and say, like you'd have a can of gas carrying around with you and say, oh, I got to pull over and plug this in for a minute?
You'd need a really big trunk.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the problem right now. We can't get lithium ion batteries. It used to be that you look at every cordless power tool that, and cell phones that have lithium batteries in them. There are lithium battery jump packs that are the size of a paperback book that you can jumpstart a car with. It takes a lot of those to charge up an electric car.
Okay.
So right now, this the portable units are probably 3 feet tall and 3 feet wide.
Okay, so not so portable.
Yeah, not so portable, okay, exactly.
Sure. You mentioned gas. We still have to talk about gasoline because it's still the main
source of propulsion. Gasoline here in the Bay State has gone up about five cents over the past week. We're averaging $3.44 a gallon right now. Certainly pain at the pump. When you go to fill up, you realize, gas went up. And it's up about $1.05 over the past year. So, the average person, fills up probably 10 or 12 gallons a week. So there's, compared to last year at this time, they're spending another, $12 to $15 a week for gasoline over the course of 52 weeks. So all of a sudden it starts to add up. You're spending another, $700 more for gasoline a year. And that money comes from somewhere. So it might come out of disposable income that, maybe you went out to eat or you went bowling or you went to concerts or whatever the case is. So this is starting to affect some people, certainly, and we're continuing to look at that. Right now, the world is in a bit of a turmoil, so we don't know, is what's going on in Ukraine. Is that going to affect gas prices? Is, everything with Russia going to affect gas prices? If you own gasoline and oil stocks, life has been pretty good to you so far because those gasoline stocks have gone up. In fact, some of the oil companies have reported record profits in the past year or so. So, it depends on what side of the coin you're at. It pains me every time I fill up these days.
This time of year, it's so unusual. You expect it to be, this is the lowest point of cost for gasoline, but I checked the price of oil this morning, it's almost $92 a barrel. So that continues to go up as well.
Yeah, when I checked earlier today, it was just a little over that. It was 92.02.
Okay.
That was for West Texas. Brent, the North Sea oil, is 93.17. And the wholesale price of gasoline is still quite expensive. So even on the mercantile exchange where a lot of gasoline is traded, that gas price is about 50 cents a gallon higher than it was just a few months ago. So we are seeing these continued high prices, and we don't really know where they're going to go. I read a report that said we might see $100 per barrel oil in the next month or two. That's certainly possible. I hate to quote those kind of numbers because it always seems like a self-fulfilling prophecy when you say, oh, we're going to pay $4 a gallon for gas by summertime. I hate to say that, but you never know.
Okay. Let's not then.
let's not.
Let's talk about some basic winter vehicle maintenance. Here we are. We just had a big ice storm. I've noticed more potholes opening up on the streets. What are some of the things that we should be aware of for
Let's start with the ice storm. I got quite a few emails from people with broken door handles on their car because they went out and their cars had, literally encrusted in 2 inches of ice, and they you know, chipped away at the door handle and then yanked it and yanked it and yanked it. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, the door handle's in their hand and they're not in their car. So if your car is encrusted in ice, first off, try all the doors, you know, front, back. Don't just try the driver's door. In fact, the driver's door would be the last door I would try to put any force on, because if you break it,
you can't close it.
Now I was saying you can't close it. Yeah. You can't get in it. You can't. It becomes more awkward. So try all the other doors first, and always push rather than pull. Every door has a little bit of give on it. You know, if you sort of hip check your door, you may kind of fracture that ice around the door, and that's going to be enough to loosen it up. I don't recommend going out there with a tea kettle full of steaming hot water, because pouring hot water on cold, icy glass is going to, you'll be able to get in your car then, because the window's going to break. So don't do that. But if you wanted to get out there with lukewarm water and pour it on the door, it may be just enough to thaw that ice out a little bit, or a can of windshield de-icer spray yep. it around the door. You know, if you have the ability, if you have an outlet that's safe, and if you went out there with a hairdryer and slowly tried to melt the ice around the door. But I've always found the kind of push rather than pull, kind of bang against the door a little bit, try to free it up. This is where remote car starters come in really handy, because if you can, you know, set your heat on high before you go in at night and remote start it, and the car kind of warms up from the inside, that's the best way to do it. But patience is the key when it comes to getting into a frozen car. You don't want to do any more damage. Today, you know, typical shop labor rates of $100 to $150 an hour, a couple hours to replace a door handle. You know, all of a sudden now that's a $500 repair. Yeah,
if they can get the part now too, right?
Yeah. And that's a good point. A lot of places now are actually relying on the internet to get parts, where they used to call the local car dealer or parts store and say, hey, I need a door handle for a, you know, Toyota Corolla. We don't have it. So you go to the internet and, you know, you overnight it out, and all of a sudden you get it in the next day or so.
Right.
But you're going to, everybody pays for that. So a little bit of preventative maintenance. Once you get the doors open, though, wipe down all the rubber gaskets around the inside of the door where the door seals, and go to the hardware store and buy a can of silicone spray and spray it all around the gaskets. And that will displace the water. So the next time when this happens, and it's only February 7th, we're going to have more winter to come.
Right.
And, you know, next time maybe the doors won't freeze, because that silicone will keep the moisture from building up around the doorway.
A big problem this past storm, I'm sure you're aware, was frozen windshield wipers. They were ineffective, just crusted in ice. How do you deal with that, John?
The problem is people didn't really recognize the storm was going to be quite as bad as it was. One of the easiest things you can do, and it's a little bit awkward, but it's easy enough. If you can cover your windshield with something, a blanket, tarp, you know, even some newspapers or something, and then you can kind of peel that off. All of a sudden, now you can get the ice off the windshield. There's two kind of positions on things. Do you put your windshield wipers in the up position, or do you let them sit against the windshield? I'm a let them sit against the windshield person. I don't put the wipers up. I think it puts additional stress on the springs that hold the windshield wipers. Also, I worry on a windy ice storm, if the windshield wipers freeze while they're in the up position and the wind catches them and smacks against the windshield, you could very well break a windshield. So, you know, same thing, chip away at the ice a little bit at a time, a little bit of warm water, or that, you know, spray can of windshield de-icer can sometimes kind of make its way through. Even if you have a gallon of windshield washer that you use to refill your windshield washer, that's basically alcohol, soap, and water. So if you sort of poured that on the windshield, that may help thaw some of the ice out, and then again slowly and carefully chip away at it. We're fortunate we don't get a ton of these ice storms, but we do get them periodically, and it reminds us that how dangerous both the driving can be, but how hard it is just to get into your car. One of the things that we have learned from COVID is we didn't really need to go anywhere.
Right.
So we can, you know, there are certain times where you can kind of look at the weather and go, you know what, do I really need to go out? No, I don't think so. Why don't I stay home for the day, and I'll wait till tomorrow when it's a little bit better out.
Hopefully next time we talk, we can talk about your car not overheating, because it'll be warmer then, John.
Thank you so much. That's what we can hope for. Exactly. That's what we can hope for.
Great to talk to you.
Always good, Joe. Always fun.
Likewise. Thanks.